the guy in agriculture I'm talking about is Dr. Carl Willard. He is the professor, a professor of forest hydrology and watershed management, SIU. And first off, Dr. Willard, it's good to meet you.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
I'm gonna be mean to you today. I've already told people. I'm gonna put you in really in a horrible, uncomfortable position, but I think you're the man for the job. Dr. Willard is working on keeping fertilizer in the field, in the ground, on the dirt, not in the water. That is a gross oversimplification. But that's the point. We're going to try to make the points for you as time goes by. But you're doing this work at SIU. This work is important. Other people recognize that. $9.8 million in research grants have come to the university as a result of your work?
Yeah.
That's a pretty good... I'm not used to seeing checks with that many zeros.
Well, Tom, I've been here 17 years, so it's been a long, steady stream, and we've been fortunate to work with a lot of good partners on our work. And I have a lot of good colleagues as well, John Schoonover, Jackie Krim, and others who really contribute a lot to this research, as well as all the grad students over the years.
Yeah, and then so you work at SIU, but also Penn State.
Yeah. Yeah, I came here in 1999 from Penn State University, and fresh out of my PhD, pretty green, and but ready to go, ready to hit the ground running with this type of research. You know, ag is a big issue here, obviously in Illinois, with, you know, approximately 80% of the land acreage in ag. So, you know, I knew coming in here that that I wanted to work on those type of issues.
This is one of the biggest things out there. It is. And here's the thing. It is so big and has so many ramifications, you have to take it apart. Let's look at the more dramatic aspect, I feel, of this. In the United States, average fertilizer on field per acre can be 12 pounds, 26 pounds an acre. Hard for some people to believe we deliver that much onto a ground. You go to Africa, it's a pound. It's a half a pound, and then there's none whatsoever. So what do you see the difference between these two countries? A country that cannot feed its people and a people that can, and then overfeed us, as we can all tell, and then still feed the rest of the world. The key to that is the American farmer and fertilizer and a huge industrial output to facilitate that. How huge, Doc?
Yeah, it's super huge. I mean, we, you know, with the growing world population, adding another 2 billion by, you know, in the next 35 to 50 years. One of the biggest challenges of our generation is how do we feed all those people? And U.S. agriculture, of course, is expected to play a big role in that. And especially here in the Midwest, the breadbasket of the country, where we're growing lots of corn and soybeans, and we need to continue those high outputs, but also to make it a more sustainable production where we're not losing as many nutrients, where we're limiting that nutrient export to surface water. So we're trying to minimize the impact on the environment, Tom.
Phosphates, nitrates, I mean, you can go down the list and people say, oh, you know, their knowledge of fertilizer, if you're not in the agriculture business, it can be used for an explosive. But we don't realize that we have an abundance of this product, and that's one of the things that defines this country. And it goes, we talk about oil and finding it and power and all these things, the American fertilizer in the field, growing corn that feeds its people and keeping the price low is one of the things that built this country. Now, the research you do is that industrial output doesn't end up being washed out of the field, down the stream, into the Mississippi and Ohio River, and out the Ohio and Mississippi, out into the Gulf of Mexico, right, where it affects the environment in very profound ways, especially nitrates and phosphates.
Right. Yeah, the Gulf hypoxia issue, many have heard about the dead zone in the Gulf. That's been an issue for the last couple decades, and that is related to the amount of nitrogen and phosphorus moving down the Mississippi into the Gulf. So that's a big push among all the states in the Mississippi River Basin to try to limit their outputs of excess fertilizers moving into the river to try to help the folks down in the Gulf. You know, there's an important, obviously, fishing industries there that we want to see continue to be sustained. But we need to certainly grow lots of grain, too. So it's that balance act between trying to have high outputs, but also minimizing those impacts on the environment.
And it's interesting, from a farmer standpoint, I paid a lot of money for that fertilizer, and I don't want it washing down the stream.
Right.
I want it to stay in the field. I make more money when I'm not spending that much money on 12 pounds of anhydrous an acre or whatever it is. You know, anhydrous is not a good analogy, I think, in this one, unless you tell me differently.
Well, yeah, it's lots of different forms. Anhydrous is one of the big forms that farmers will utilize for nitrogen sources.
But not a washout as bad as others?
No, well, it's coming in. We do have some actually volatilization to the atmosphere. So, yeah, it's not.
Different
kind. Once it gets converted to nitrate, certainly it can be mobile in water. And that's usually, Tom, the form that we're most concerned about moving in water is nitrate. And then you mentioned phosphate earlier as well. And those are sort of the co-limiting nutrients for primary production in or algae growth in waters. So that's what we're trying to limit.
But imagine a world with no phosphates. You die soon.
Right.
Too many. It's like,
right.
It's
yeah,
like
it's
alcoholism.
A balancing act.
A little bit's fun, a little too much is not. Right? I mean, you go down this list of items. You don't want it to wash away. The farmer keeps more money in his pocket because his nitrogen's there. The ditch banks, the waterways do not suffer, and then the ocean as well. Then you got your costs, and you think, well, if you save that money from from that fertilizer, less industrial output, less transportation, so less air pollution, is you can literally start going down the list of reasons why all this really works. Now, once upon a time, we looked at the plants to take care of it, crop rotation, soybeans in particular.
Yeah, I mean, our grandfather's generation of agricultural production, they were using things like cover crops. They weren't really talking about cover crops, but that's what they were doing.
Yeah.
They had the rotations. And as we became, as agriculture community became more industrialized, more specialized, where we're growing much more corn and beans and less rotations, you know, those things sort of faded away, and that knowledge was lost a bit. But the last 10 years that I've been working at SIU and going around the state and nation, really there's been a major renaissance, if you will, in the use of cover crops throughout the country and the promotion.
Some pretty eclectic stuff that I'm unaccustomed to in fields in southern Illinois, rye.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, I can tell you that I've never seen a field of rye in my life.
Yeah, cereal rye is a big one because of the ease of establishment and commonly will grow that in front of soybeans and even things, Tom, like hairy vetch. I don't know if you've seen that, but that's another one, a legume. So we can actually add some nitrogen in front of a corn crop to try to limit perhaps the amount of nitrogen that the producer would have to utilize.
You know, for a fun little fun fact, we could actually use the word Jethro Tull in its real a real organic sense. Organic sense, Dr. Williard. Organic sense. That's a little,
right.
Little fun for the farmer folks. Jethro Tull was born late 1600s into 1741. He came up with the seed drill and crop rotation.
Right.
So you think the rock band Jethro Tull, Ian Anderson, there's a real Jethro Tull, and he's really... he's the giant in which we all stand on his shoulders.
Yeah, I mean, this is the key is trying to utilize basically what nature's given us in these different crop rotations that we have access to. It's a matter of getting those back into the thoughts and minds of the producers. And there's lots of good folks in Extension, as well as SIU, that are really helping to promote this, as well as the NRCS, the local county agencies. There's lots of good folks who are out there promoting the use of cover crops. And what we're doing, Tom, is trying to provide the research, the backup for saying, okay, how much nitrogen or how much phosphorus are we actually keeping in the fields instead of leaching out into streams? So we know cover crops are good. But really now we're in an era where we're going to have to be doing a lot of nutrient accounting. You know, how good are they? And those are the questions we're trying to answer at SIU.
Now that's interesting. You can't make decisions unless you know the numbers so you can get baseline, so you can get guidance. And that's got to be difficult because one of the pieces of research in particular you're working on, really I find fascinating on a Southern Illinois aspect, is a lot of people don't understand that many fields in Southern Illinois have tiles in them.
Yes.
If we did not have those tiles, the soil would be too wet here for us to grow the crops we do. Many of these are, and especially in southeastern Illinois, where you see that really black earth by southeastern Illinois College and Stoneface in that little area, and then back up and then over across Gallatin County, you look, You compare the dirt from Murfreesboro, light brown. You go over there, it's dark black, right?
Right.
But also some of that is because the river over the years left that silt there. All right? So it's tiled. And that means it takes the water out quicker and more effectively, and that means it takes the fertilizer out more effectively. And this idea you've got on how to capture this water is one of the ones that really is a very attractive idea.
Well, Tom, you've done your homework. I'm speaking of a project that, or you're referring to a project my colleague is leading, John Schoon, over on saturated buffers. And we're just starting that in Johnson County. The area you're talking about, we have a pretty progressive producer that we're working with, and where we're taking some of that tile drainage water and running it out into lateral lines and letting that move through that riparian buffer and hopefully getting things like plant uptake, hopefully getting things like denitrification where the nitrate's being converted to nitrogen gas. So we're less of those nitrates will be ending up in those surface waters. And we actually just kicked off the project this winter, putting in those lateral lines. And we can divert, you know, during the dormant season when crops aren't growing, you know, upwards of 60% of the water out into those lateral lines that wouldn't.
Instead of right into the stream.
That's right. That's right. Because that's what, as you alluded to, you know, when those tile lines are going right into the ditch, we're losing all those benefits that things, you know, the processes like denitrification that can happen in those soils.
You know, so, it's weird because, you know, we're talking a double whammy here. Because I was with a farmer in southeastern Illinois, R.C. Davidson, went to the edge of his fields where the Ohio River is literally washing it away.
Right.
Because one of the subtexts here, what we're talking about, is keeping dirt in the ground instead of washing away, too. This is another big problem. It's maybe secondary to some people, but it all depends on where your property is.
Yeah, and going back to cover crops, you know, we didn't mention it. We were talking about the nutrient side of it, but also just providing that cover during, you know, the winter time, early spring is super important in terms of trying to reduce the amount of soil erosion. Because kind of look at the rains we were just having, Tom, the last couple days here and last week. The cover crops, it's unbelievable. The difference in the amount of soil loss we get from fields that are covered with cover crops versus that are not. And we still have cover crops growing, Tom, so we're just getting ready. Probably next week, if things dry out a bit, we'll be terminating those and then getting ready for planting. So this is a critical time right now in April, early April, when we get those heavy rains to try to reduce some of that soil loss. Because as you say, that's really the fertility, that topsoil, the farmers need to keep on their fields.
And we're washing huge amounts of it out of Illinois every day. And boy, with the geological structure that we have here, the earth facilitates it. I mean, because you look at Illinois, and you have to look at it this way, that we're in a basin. We are in a big pool where earth has settled in, dirt has settled into this pool here in southern Illinois where we are, and then the two rivers. So the soil makeup, and then we've got two systems that are just built to wash away the edges, and everything goes to east, west, and then, I mean, sucks it right out. We're kind of in the end. So here's the thing. Dr. Carl Williard is joining us. Professor of Forest Hydrology and Watershed Management. He's working on keeping fertilizer in the fields. You go to Kroger, you go to IGA, you go to whatever store you go, and you walk down and you think, wow, look at all these wonderful things, right? We literally are kings. When you get agricultural choice and all, I can have kiwi and pineapple anytime.
Right.
I mean, you have to, the sense of wonder that you have. Fertilizer is what allows us to do this in transportation. But here in southern Illinois, fertilizer is the big thing. Now, other places where they don't have access to it, they starve, they die, they need food from other locations. This is what you're working on. And when it comes to this, we're talking about human survival. We're talking about potential conflict over shortages of foods. We're talking polluted oceans, polluted creeks because of the phosphates and nitrates we use, and they settle and they move and they can damage life if not used properly. I mean, you can burn a field up if you don't. I did that once. Feel a little bad about it still. Granddad was nice about it, but probably should have paid a little more attention. You can burn some stuff up with some nitrates.
Right, right.
That when we move forward in this world, the ability to be able to have food to keep this many people fed, Egypt, Egyptian spring, right? corn shortages, corn prices.
Right.
I mean, Doc, how do you describe it? I you can tell I'm passionate on the issue.
Yeah. And, you know, you grew up around farming, Tom, it sounds like. My grandfather and father were farmers. And, you know, farmers sometimes get a bad rap on this, that they don't care as much about the environment as others. And I really, you know, working with producers throughout Southern Illinois.
You've had actually somebody say that to you? I've never had anybody say that farmers don't care about the environment.
Yeah, you can get that type of mentality, but wow. Really I've seen the exact opposite. And when you look at it, Tom, these are the original land stewards. These are, you know, they work with the land every day.
We get to say Jethro Tull again. Because he knew the importance. Because when you live on an island, it causes you to learn a little quicker.
Right, right. And they're, you know, they're working, they're out there every day. So they see the impacts of soil erosion, and they're paying for the fertilizer out of their pocket. So, you know, they're looking for ways that they can help their bottom line, but they're also looking for ways to keep their farm sustainable for generations to come. A lot of these producers, they want to hand their farm down to their son or daughter, and so on down the line. So it's really, we're trying to give them tools and help them and just help them along on some things they already know, some of their practical knowledge. They know cover crops work. Yep. Once they use them. But now we need to, what we talked about before is that accounting. You know, how many pounds of nitrogen, how many pounds of phosphorus are we actually saving by utilizing cover crops? Because when the regulators come calling, you know, like they have somewhat in the Chesapeake Bay, we're going to have those numbers in the Midwestern United States to show the federal regulators that, hey, we're working on this problem and this is what we're doing. These are the number of acres we've been put into BMPs like cover crops and, right, and saturated buffers. And there's lots of others, Tom.
I suffer from some pretty heavy idealism. I imagine that if Cousin Doug in Gallatin County doesn't have to put that much fertilizer on it, that the production is still the same, that we take that fertilizer to North Africa and we don't have to send food there anymore. We send fertilizer. They grow their own crops. They learn cover crops. They learn crop rotation, and they learn to feed themselves. That, to me, that's the holy grail of what you're doing, in my opinion. I mean, long range it.
Yeah, and there's a lot of good people in the U.S. who work abroad in extension and in agricultural extension trying to take what we've learned, and they have a lot of indigenous knowledge too, and it's working with that as well.
Yeah.
But try, you know, that's the key, Tom. You said it, is folks, we want to get to the point where countries are food secure, that they can grow their own food for their people, and there's not a whole bunch of food insecurity, because when you have food insecurity, there's lots of issues
that come out of it, on and on. And you know, the fact that they have ground, right?
Right.
They have the dirt. All we got to do is make the dirt viable.
Right.
And we can do that with our technology very easily enough, because this could be bootstrapped. You know, that first series up, the fertilizer comes to the United States maybe the first 3 years, bootstrap up to where you've got food production for somebody to build a fertilizer factory, use ocean or any of a long list of other things, human waste. I mean, when you talk about nitrogen and phosphates being washed out of this country, our sewer systems, nobody wants to talk about it because it's icky.
Yeah.
But that's one of the biggest deals. We're losing millions of tons of nutrients out of this country right through the water system or flushed right down the river with our fertilizer. We need to learn to capture that stuff too. Once they learn how to do that, they bootstrap up. They have their own factory. They save us. They don't have to eat their seed crops to live to the next year. And you bootstrap them up, and the world changes very quickly after that.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. We were just reading an article in my graduate class. My grad students were discussing, and it's simple things like they don't have access in some of these developing countries to fertilizer.
Yeah, none.
And it's hard for us to imagine, but it's as simple as where can they get the economic capability to purchase enough and create enough fertilizer to put on their field, because they have some very good soils, as you said.
Yeah.
And so it's sometimes it's just a lack of nutrient additions to those soils. That's the problem.
Yeah, could be even just one or two small items that stop a food crop from growing.
Right.
Dr. Carl Willard, I hope you get a chance to you and I come back sometime.
Thanks, Tom.
Because as I said, this is being done at SIU. It's taken for granted when we walk into the store that we're going to have this incredible selection. There's industrial output. There are whole factories right now that are working on nitrates and phosphates and these fertilizers that go into our soils that we'd never see them, but that's what allows us to live a rather luxurious life.
Yes.
You know, whether it's a watermelon, a cantaloupe, or corn. It's all from this industrial output that we give up. We think it's all agricultural. There's a big factory that's behind it.
Right.
Dr. William, it's been a pleasure to meet you. And best of luck with this, too. A lot of people with big, huge brains say what you're doing could redefine us in the coming decades. If we can come through this bottleneck for food and redistribute fertilizer and keep it where it's at, that the human race could make some real leaps forward on getting along, and that we wouldn't see small children with flies around their eyes and bloated bellies.
Yeah.
And so that, to me, is a heck of an honorable pursuit.